This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
What would you have to say in a general sense, I guess, to the community, and in a more specific sense to anybody who's dealing with or battling addiction and mental illness in combination?
Persevere. Be your own expert, because you may find that you will not get the help that you need unless you put in the effort. You have to know what's going on with you and be able to reach out and ask for that help, because a lot of times it's not thrown in your face. You have to reach out and get it. I guess to the community, I'd say to try and understand us, because we're not always as bad as we look or as bad as you think we are. I think getting the awareness that mental illness and addiction aren't as bad as they sometimes seem to people is a great thing to get out there.
Welcome back to People First Radio. We've been talking about concurrent disorders, the combination of mental illness and addiction. That was a clip from an interview with a young woman named Alita, who spoke from her personal experience dealing with alcoholism and bipolar disorder. Cheryl Peaver is manager of the Women's Mental Health Program at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, called CAMH for short, in Toronto. And she's on the line with us today. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Let's start by talking about the challenges posed by the stigma within this area of concurrent disorders.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a stigma just to mental illness in general, as mm-hmm. well as addiction. And then when you have the combination of the two, people can be doubly oppressed.
Yeah, I know my brother suffers from concurrent disorder, and I know that he prefers to be known as an addict rather than as a schizophrenic.
Yeah, quite often that's, sometimes more palpable for people or easier for the community to understand.
It is. And what particular challenges, are you specifically work with women's programs, correct?
Yes.
What do you hear from your clients with regards to the stigma?
Well, I've experienced it myself. I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic, as well as someone who's been diagnosed with depression. So I was recovering back at a time when you didn't tell a psychiatrist you used drugs, and you couldn't get into an addiction program if you had a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So things have come a long way, but I think there's still a lot of misconceptions and stereotypes, and sometimes that even exists among healthcare providers. Although the system has improved quite a bit for people with concurrent disorders,
mm-hmm.
we're still not there yet in terms of really meeting their needs and serving them well.
Mm-hmm. What do you think would be a primary course that could be taken to help create a shift in attitude around all of this?
There used to be a time when mental health workers would get sent to addiction courses and addiction workers would get sent to mental health courses, and none of those really taught people how to interact with those kind of clients or feel confident or competent in working with them. I think sometimes the greatest benefit for some of these courses would be to integrate both the staff. They can learn more from each other. And reduce some of the myths and stereotypes than they could from the content of a course. And I think quite often it's useful in workshops and courses when you do bring in people who have experienced the system, the illnesses, and can speak from their own personal experience, because quite often that's what reaches people rather than, you know, something from a textbook.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cheryl, you received a Courage to Come Back Award from the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, I think in 2007, for confronting and conquering your addictions. And I'm wondering if, in our last few minutes, you could tell us a bit about that.
Well, actually, it was 2006, and these
okay.
are awards that are given to seven people from across Ontario who've experienced substance use or mental illness and now use their experience to help others. Now, although my experience was many, many years ago, it was a very big deal for me to disclose it. in terms of accepting the nomination for this award, and to have to disclose it at work. You know, I'd worked really long and hard to get to where I was personally and professionally, and the idea of disclosing the details of my life was, you know, kind of horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So that was more of a big deal, was the disclosure and the trying to explain to people. Because, you know, all of a sudden I went from being a really competent clinician and a well-respected manager to having my clinical judgment questioned, my ethics, my boundaries. You know, to some people I was seen as a potential liability.
It's so extraordinary. It was, you know, when I hear you describing that, it's extraordinary how you've sketched out almost in just a couple of sentences from your own experience. The prejudice and the discrimination potentially, but the fundamental misunderstanding that people have about addiction and mental illness involved in what you've said there.
Yeah, and, you know, healthcare workers are just as prone to all the stereotypes and, you know, the media images and mm-hmm. stuff, and they absorb those things.
They do. So you seem to have weathered the storm of disclosure. Is there a general acceptance within your work situation now of your who you are? You're still doing the job. Have those issues been laid to rest?
Oh, no.
Oh, disappointing.
There's a bit of an ongoing process. You know, at first when I disclosed, there were a lot who just couldn't even look me in the eye or speak to me. All of a sudden, they had no idea what to say. You know, and isn't that weird that in a mental health facility mm-hmm. we can talk about it in relation to clients but not in relation to ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about work-life balance and mental health, but we don't talk about mental illness, and that's ridiculous because it affects one in four Canadians.
I know.
So then people kind of got over that and started to realize, okay, she's still the same person. You know, she's just as qualified and as boring as everyone else. And people kind of got over that. But now as new people come, you know, they start to find out about it. But CAMH has come a long way. Like, it opened up at least the discussion and at least put it on the table. And now I can bring all of myself to work rather than keeping a large part of who I was hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And we've started, you know, programs like training for managers on how to work with staff who may have an addiction issue or a mental health issue. And people are starting to now disclose more in the programs where they trust their colleagues or their manager, and they're starting to have more positive experiences. Not everyone is being discriminated against anymore.
We're
still not there.
Well, it's a work in progress, without a doubt. And you're also part of a panel discussion at a conference in Toronto next week. I think it's called Understanding Concurrent Disorders.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. And we have just maybe half a minute left.
Well, we're part of a panel just with other people in the community, kind of talking about, you know, the problems and the layers involved with concurrent disorders. A lot of times people don't just have one mental illness or one substance problem. It's multi-layered. Add to that, you know, being a refugee or an immigrant or someone experiencing poverty. You know, there are medical complications. There are a lot of things that go into it. It's not a real easy cookie-cutter approach. And so it's kind of trying to just get some of the issues on the table and get people talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And get more integration. You know, a lot of agencies need to start talking to each other and working with each other.
And in the general population, too, for people to understand that probably most of us are somewhere on that continuum of mental health and addiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is just the new other. You know, mm-hmm. people at work used to be uncomfortable working with people of different gender or race or sexual mm-hmm. orientation. This is just the new other, and people need to start getting used to, as you said, people at different places on the continuum.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very helpful perspective to wrap up at least this brief discussion on this very wide-ranging topic on. And Cheryl, we'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us on the program today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
And I hope we speak with you again at some time in the future. Good luck in your conference work next week.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheryl Peaver is a social worker and manager of the Women's Mental Health Program at Toronto's Centre for Addiction and Mental Health. Cheryl's been described by her peers as an empathetic friend, excellent social worker, and a devoted colleague. She's also a fighter who has had the courage to come back after many years of substance abuse.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.